All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. We're really excited to have you on our program today. It's our benefits program. So if you have any questions about your disability benefits or applying for disability benefits or trying to get your benefits increased, give us a call today. The number is 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. As I mentioned, we are excited to invite you to be on our program today. There are so many questions out there. There are so many things that are going on in the Veterans Administration. We're going to be talking about the potential of adding hypertension to the list of presumptive disabilities for many of you Vietnam veterans out there. We're going to be talking about some other things that have been going on. But before we do that, I want to make sure that we thank our sponsors. And this portion of Veterans Radio is being brought to you by Legal Help for Veterans. And Legal Help for Veterans is a disability law firm specializing in veterans' disability. Go to their website, legalhelpforveterans.com, for more information. We're also being sponsored by the National Veterans Business NVBDC. This is a third-party certification organization that will certify that your company is truly veteran-owned. This is really important if you're trying to do business with the federal government or with veteran-friendly corporations. If they want to work with a veteran-owned business, they want to make sure that you are actually a veteran-owned business. So we want to talk about that a little bit later on. And finally, we are sponsored by the Ann Arbor VA. And the Ann Arbor VA, as for those of us in southeastern Michigan know, one of the finest VA facilities in the country, we think. And they have are helping us out here at Veterans Radio. So you can just go to va.gov and type in Ann Arbor and everything will be there. By the way, we are getting ready at some point. I don't know if they've given us a date yet of the renaming of the Ann Arbor VA, Veterans Health Service. It's going to be the Charles S. Kettles Veterans Hospital, which is going to be awesome. I'm really excited about that. I do have two things that I want to make sure that I get out there before we get into our program today. And that is that this is a Vietnam veteran talking here now. So I had the honor and privilege of talking to Tim O'Brien the other day. And Tim O'Brien is the author of The Things They Carried and many other things. But he's also got a new documentary coming out. It's going to drop on March 2nd. And it is called The War and Peace of Tim O'Brien. And we dropped our interview up on our podcast on Saturday, so you can listen to my interview with him. We're also going to be replaying that interview on next Sunday's program. It was really fun talking with Tim. He's one of the authors who has this ability to really influence you with his words. He pulls out all kinds of emotions when you are reading his material, and I think that you'll really enjoy this. So on March 2nd, look for video on demand. The name of the documentary is The War and Peace of Tim O'Brien. The other one, which I just got today, is that there is going to be another documentary that's going to be dropped on March the 5th, and it's called The Wounded Heroes Documentary, and it is about alternative treatments for post-traumatic stress. And you'll notice there that I didn't say disorder. And that is something that we have said here on Veterans Radio for a long, long time. We like to drop the D if we can. And inside this documentary, they talk about dropping the D. It's just post-traumatic stress, period. That's it. And so they are going to be talking about some of the unorthodox treatments that they think that some have been used at certain facilities and some of the new techniques and treatments that are out there. And so I would encourage you to look at that information. We are planning on having that documentary producer on in a couple of weeks, but it's called The Wounded Heroes Documentary, and it drops on March the 5th, video on demand. So those two things, you've got The War and Peace of Tim O'Brien, and you've got The Wounded History or the Wounded Heroes documentary that you want to mark on your calendars. March 2nd for Tim O'Brien, March 5th for the Wounded Heroes documentary. The other things that are going on, I guess you could say, in the world is that you can now listen to Veterans Radio on another platform, and it's called the Veterans Channel. .com, and the veteranschannel.com is it's a streaming facility out there, so I would encourage you to go and look at that. We're very excited to be on that particular platform because it allows our audience to be expanded again and again, and we're truly blessed this last year with the way things have been going. We've picked up, as some of you are listening in Detroit, to WDTK. We're on KMET out in California, KFOW in Minnesota, everywhere. It's really kind of cool. It's very fun. And so we want to make sure that you can listen to us. Of course, Tam Air, social media expert, says make sure that you follow us on Facebook and on Twitter and on LinkedIn. So make sure that you do that as well. As I mentioned, today is our benefits program, so we are encouraging you to give us a call. I want to bring on our experts. Mostly we're going to be talking about disability today, probably, unless somebody from the VA gives us a call. And so number one is retired Brigadier General in the United States Air Force, Carol Ann Fasson. Carol Ann, welcome back.
Good afternoon, team. How are you?
We are fine. And number two on our list is Michael Smith. And Michael Smith is the Washtenaw County Executive Director of the Veteran Service Program here in Washtenaw County. And Michael, welcome back.
Thank you, Dale. Always good to be together with you and General Fasson and Derek.
And anybody else who's out there listening. The question, I guess, or the news of the day, and I'll just address it to either one of you too, if you've read about it like I did, is that they're contemplating adding hypertension to the list of presumptive diseases caused by exposure to, in this case, Agent Orange or another toxic defoliants and so forth that are out there. So, Michael, have you heard anything about that?
Well, you know, hypertension's had a bad rap over the years. There have been times in the past where it was recommended that it be added to the list of presumptive conditions. As a matter of fact, the list of newly approved disabilities, Parkinson's-like symptoms, hypothyroidism, and bladder cancer, that list, when it initially got to the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, it also included hypertension. Mm-hmm. And it was excluded from the National Defense Authorization Act that added the three new conditions. And that's happened in the past before with hypertension. So I read the article in Military Times, and there really needs to be some ownership here on the government's part in terms of recognizing hypertension. They're all over the place inside the body. You've got ischemic heart disease. And they will even service connect diabetic nephropathy, which is basically diabetic hypertension, if the hypertension was caused by the sugar levels beginning to affect the kidneys. Well, it's almost ridiculous that they halfway recognize the interaction of the internal bodily organs, but then they exclude hypertension. So I hope our members of Congress will do right by that group of veterans out there who are suffering from hypertension directly related to their exposure to herbicides, and make it right by them.
Well, I certainly will. Carol Ann?
Michael, I totally agree with you. Bottom line, you know, we've been doing the ebooks that I've been working on, and I keep saying, wait for the presumptives to come about, and that's probably 2 years, and you're exactly correct. And bottom line, they're costing this out, and it's all because of cost. And that is very sad when our young men and women are servicing their country. They never signed up for a paycheck. And this is the opportunity for our country to give them their due. And I agree with you. I wish Congress would not look at the bottom line and approve this. It will be a quality of health and life issue for our veterans. And, you know, it's like saying one limb is greater than the other limb. And you're exactly correct. They've approved ischemic heart disease as a nurse. You can't pull this all apart. It's all connected. And so they need to do the right thing and approve this.
I guess I'm a little bit confused about hypertension in a standpoint. Isn't hypertension something that most of us eventually come down with at some point? No?
Not necessarily.
I think it depends on, but it is interconnected system-wide. As we hear with Agent Orange, if you've got ischemic heart disease, and your lungs are connected and you need to breathe and your heart is pumping, just in its simplicity, all of this and your kidneys and you're not filtering appropriately with your kidneys, all of this contributes to hypertension. And I think, you know, there's another element out there that I just want to say, and Michael, it would be great to hear your thoughts. So if, let's say they approve hypertension with Agent Orange or our Vietnam veterans, then what happens to the other veterans who have hypertension in other eras? And I think for them, the legislators, Congress, I think they see this price tag going up, but I think they need to approve this across the board because it is related to our veterans' health, and it's because of service to our country. So approve it.
Yeah, and it's always baffled my mind how it's almost as if herbicide is selective about what part of the body it wants to affect. Yeah. so you know, you're almost making this chemical agent smart, like, oh, we're going to attack the larynx, but we're not going to mess with the esophagus. Right. We're going to attack the prostate, but we're not up until now going to affect the bladder, or we're going to affect the heart, but we're not going to affect the kidneys or the liver or the pancreas. It's just almost hard to accept that there are smart, scientific, medically minded people out there who are literally separating the inside of the human body and where herbicides will go and affect and not affect. It's not necessarily true that people will get hypertension. And here's another thing about hypertension, and General Fasson will back me up on this. I'll tell you the honest truth. It's hard to even get a 10% evaluation for hypertension. Yep. Your diastolic and your systolics have to be at these almost unheard of. You'd be dead if you're a diastolics and systolics readings were at the levels that the VA needs just to grant a 10% evaluation. I know a lot of people who are service connected for hypertension and they have the 0%, which means the VA recognizes it's related to service, but it's not high enough to be compensable. I know very few who are at the 10% rating or higher.
And you're exactly correct, because you know what? For the normal, the citizen out there, once you read, you know, the 90 as the diastolic, right, you're always, you know, you've got mild hypertension. You need to do the following things. With our poor veterans, 120, 130, it's like you're stroke-like. And it's not healthy. And you're exactly correct. We need to give them a good quality of life and take a look at this.
And if they add it, it would probably behoove the VA, just like they did with diagnostic code 8045, which is traumatic brain injury. Prior to the current conflicts, Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation New Dawn, that diagnostic code for traumatic brain injury, the highest evaluation on the rating schedule was 10%.
Right.
And it had been for years. And because of how problematic and how common TBIs are now with this conflict, the VA and the Congress finally went in and looked at that diagnostic code, and now it goes from 0 to 100. So I think in reality, if they do add hypertension, which I hope they do, they should probably go in there and look at that diagnostic code and, you know, be a little bit more liberal, meaning change the what the 0% criteria is and make it what's now the 10% and make the 10% a little bit, because
yes,
it's almost unheard of that people would be walking around with diastolics and systolic numbers as high as that is, just
yes,
you know, just to go in and you know, at just like with skin diseases and other disorders, you're never symptomatic when you go in for a compensation and pension exam. So
I was just gonna ask the question because my doctor just bumped up my high blood pressure medication, my lisinopril, from 20 to 30. She says, you know, your high blood pressure is not under control. And I'm going, what? And then this thing came down and I'm going, oh, here it goes again. I'll file and I'll say, yes, you've got it, but no percentage type of thing. What, Caroline, I'll ask you this as our nurse representative today. What was considered normal blood pressure in today's world?
Well, it's still, you know, people out there, you hear the 120 over 80. Okay. So, but it depends on, you know, the individual. Some runners are, you know, around, you know, 80 over 40s, 90 over 50. It depends on you. So you're supposed to, you know, have an idea of what your range is. And your doctor should be able to tell you that. You know, if you're always getting headaches and there's some issues and you've got cardiac problems, you should know what your normal baseline range is. For me, 120 over 80, I feel like I'm hypertensive. And so I know I get headaches sometimes, and maybe it's that, you know, I don't have enough fluids on board and I haven't been staying hydrated. But I think I won't come out and usually tell anybody, okay, this is your blood pressure. I would like to, you know, do a baseline standing, sitting, lying, and do it a couple times, not when you're coming in. As Michael said, you're going to the doctor's office. It's always going to be elevated. Yeah. You know, you're so concerned and you're upset. But if you're going in for a disability increase rating, Dale, I think it's really good to get that documentation from your physician that if you're on 2 and 3 medications and they're upping the dose, that's really good criteria or justification that you probably shouldn't be at zero. Even right. If it's a mild 10%, you got to go after it.
I may be talking to you folks later on.
Well, and you should, because I, you know what, General Fasson, you're right. Actually, part of that 10% criteria states not only do the diastolic and systolics have to be at a certain level, but it also has the caveat or has to be controlled by hypertensive medication.
Medication.
So if you're on medicine, yes, you should probably be at 10%.
Right.
I'll be in touch. We'll have a contest. Which one of you guys can get me the most? We need to take a real quick break right now, and we're encouraging you out there, folks. This is our benefits program. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We've got our two experts here that can answer your questions. As you can just, you know, as you just witnessed, bring up something that's bothering you. You never know. It might be something that is considered a, you know, a service-connected disability. And this is, you know, this is what they do every day, is to help you, you know, receive the benefits that you're entitled to. You put your life at risk. You put yourself out there where most people don't ever want to go. And sometimes you get exposed to things that are not very good for you. So we're going to take a break. The phone number, I forgot, is 734-822-1600. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. Even small actions can make a world of difference. If you know a veteran in crisis, please call the Veterans Crisis Line, 800-273-8255, 800-273-8255. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And we are back on Veterans Radio, and this portion of Veterans Radio is brought to you by the Eisenhower Center. The Eisenhower Center has an after-impact program. They specialize in taking care of people who have suffered from traumatic brain injuries, post-traumatic stress. If you've been in a car accident, they have a lot of rehab programs going on, and the Eisenhower Center is here in Ann Arbor, and it's also in Jacksonville, Florida. So for more information about the Eisenhower Center, you just go to their website. That's Eisenhower.com for more information. And VetBiz Central, these are veterans helping veterans, assisting veterans, active duty, guard, and reserve members in the formation and expansion of their own businesses. So go to VetBizCentral.com for more information. We're here talking about benefits, and the number, again, is 734-822-1600. We're talking with retired Air Force Brigadier General Carol Ann Fassone. She is a nurse, always will be a nurse. And Michael Smith, who's the Executive Director for the Veterans Service Office here in Washtenaw County in Michigan. So we just talked about the idea of adding to the list possibly of hypertension. I was wondering if there's anything else that is going on out there that you're hearing a lot more about, more claims for various diseases or conditions, if anything has been coming up. I know we're still trying to work with post-traumatic stress on a regular basis. The VA has been trying to do a really good job of, suicide prevention programs going on out there. Make sure that, if you do have any issues along those lines, that you can give the Veterans Crisis Hotline a call. And that number is 1-800-273-8255. Press the number 1 and you'll be in touch with a counselor right away, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. We are here to help you folks. We don't want anybody, any veterans that are left, to feel alone. Go ahead. Caroline, go ahead.
Gail, just to piggyback, some of our last discussion in the last segment, I want to remind all of our veterans again, it doesn't matter what your disability rating is in. We talked about hypertension. Let's say it's diabetes. Let's say it's ischemic heart disease. But if you believe it has increased, you're having more symptoms, you're having more problems with an issue, you are rated at 0%, but you are service connected, please go to somebody that can help you, whether county counselor, VSO, legal help for veterans, because we could go in and help you get an increase. If you're having the symptoms and the problems in those areas, please don't just sit back and think that there's nothing else that could be granted. That's not really true. So go to the experts to help you get an increase in some of those areas.
I think that's an important question, because we did get an email this week from a gentleman who wanted to, I think he said he was rated at 50% for post-traumatic stress, and he thought he should be higher. Can one of you kind of take us through that process of how do we apply for additional benefits?
Well, we've talked about this in the past. This is somewhat of a recurring question, but I understand why it's a recurring question. So essentially, just like establishing service connection and getting your initial evaluation, a request for an increase requires medical evidence. That's basically the bottom line. The VA uses a schedule of rating that is assigns percentages for how disabling any kind of medical condition is based on how symptomatic you are. So if a person has an evaluation at 50%, the next higher rating for a mental health condition on the schedule of rating is 70%. And what we try to do, and I know General Fassone does this as well, and Jim, is we sit down with veterans with a copy of the schedule of rating, and we go over that list of symptoms and basically say, well, do you have this? And if they do, and they know they do, and it's contained in their treatment records, then we feel comfortable with just merely submitting a request to reopen the claim. We just basically say to the VA that the condition has gotten worse. Now, we will not do that if we don't have the medical evidence to suggest that. And the reason why is ratings that are less than 20 years old are not protected. And what I mean by that is this. There are three outcomes to a reopened claim. That is, the VA confirms and continues you at your current rate, which is a positive. The VA could increase you, which is another positive. Or the VA could propose to reduce you, which is a negative. And so if you don't have the medical evidence to support a request for increase, then our guidance would be don't reopen that claim. Because if you go to an examination and you rely on the VA's examining officials and they find that your symptomatology doesn't not only warrant an increase, but it warrants a decrease, they can propose to decrease you. So the process essentially goes back to the veteran about what he or she knows about their symptoms and how bad their conditions are. I just reopened a veteran's claim for an increase in his back condition. He hadn't been rated for that since 2007. And this person can barely walk or stand or do anything. And it was reflected in his treatment records. And not only that, but in the examination that I just got for him through the VA. And he will get an increase. He definitely will get an increase. Although it's been less than 20 years, but his symptomatology has certainly worsened to the point that would warrant an increase.
I totally agree with you, Michael. We just had another veteran who brought in his records from his private physician, and it literally, he was deteriorating in that area. And so we're able to get those records, and we got testimony from the physician, and we sent that in. So we're waiting to hear if he gets an increase also.
Okay, so the main question is, you know, if you want to get an increase, you better have some medical proof to back it up.
Yes. That's correct.
And yeah. Not just because maybe you feel bad. If you feel bad, go see your physician and, you know, see if they can write up something that says, you know, that your condition is worsening over time or worsening. It's not improving. Let's put it that way. And Michael, your analogy reminded me of, you know, a football thing. You know, anytime you throw a pass up, only, you know, three things can happen and two of them are not good.
But not only that letter from the physician to say that condition is getting worse, but if you have the documentation, you know, you took an x-ray, your lab results. So there's other evidence and resources that could really supplement and assist in the increase of a disability if you have other documentation too, objective documentation, just, you know, than saying, I don't feel good, it's getting worse.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand that. We do have a caller on the line right now, and he sent us an email earlier in the week asking if he could come on and talk about a particular issue. And this is Curtis Hervey. And Curtis is from, where are you from? Iowa, I think it is. And so, Curtis, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. My name is Captain Curtis Hervey. I'm a retired veteran, combat veteran. I did over 20 years in the Army National Guard. And I live in Kansas, actually.
I'm sorry, Fort Scott, Kansas. There we go.
Fort Scott, that's right, yes, sir. And the thing I reached out to you about is that I'm trying to get a bill introduced. It's called the Personality Disorder Diagnostic Improvement Act. So the Personality Disorder Mental Diagnostic Improvement Act. So the purpose of that is to help try to minimize and reduce the number of personality disorder misdiagnoses, which lead to personality disorder diagnoses. Discharges. A lot of veterans are getting discharged, and they've been told they have personality disorders, and this creates a lot of stigma for them. This also blocks them to getting benefits. It also can it hurts them when they're doing a job search, and it kind of ruins their lives. It disenfranchises them. So this has been going on for some time now. When I went through it myself, actually. But when it happened to me, I wasn't on active duty anymore. I was retired at the time it happened to me, and it happened at the VA. And a lot of the people I've been talking with and touching bases with, different veterans, it happened to them while they were still on active duty. So the one thing we have in common is that it's a new phrase I'm trying to coin. It's called misattribution of military trauma. So you have many different types of trauma that veterans go through and military personnel go through. And we know what they are. You know, you have TBI, PTSD, MST, depression. And these sorts of things are being, in many cases, deliberately misdiagnosed in order to save the government a buck. And so that's what I'm trying to fight and resist.
Okay. Are you working with any particular congressman or senator on this?
Yes. Right now, I've already submitted a copy of the proposed bill, which is still morphing, still changing. It's a draft, of course. So I've sent it to my Kansas representative, Senator Marshall. He received it. He said he earmarked it or flagged it so that they'll look at it in their Veterans Committee. But I'm also working through the Wind and Water Project. There's an individual by the name of Derek Frontabarger. He's the Director of Governmental Affairs for the Wind and Water Project. And I reached out to a lot of different people, even Veterans Service Organizations. And so the analogy is like a quarterback throwing a football. He's the only person that caught the football. He's in D.C., and he has all the connections and the know-how to get this thing done. And we're going to get it presented to the HVAC, the House Veterans of Affairs Committee. And don't know when, this year, hopefully. And so that's my hope, and that's my goal, that's my objective, is to get it introduced so we can start the process of getting it turned into a law.
Yeah, well, we certainly wish you the best of luck with that. And I know we talked about this briefly before we went on the air today. And, Michael, you mentioned something about personality disorders that I thought was disturbing a little bit.
Well, Mr. Hervey is absolutely correct in what he's seen and experienced. It, as a matter of fact, was so prevalent in the military that Congress ordered each branch of service to identify all the personnel that they diagnosed with personality disorders and separated with personality disorders. And that list was then given to the VA, and the VA reached out to these veterans to come back in for a re-evaluation. And almost 100% of those veterans were diagnosed with PTSD, literally, which then entitled them to service connection and disability compensation. Because as Mr. Hervey poignantly pointed out, personality disorders are not recognized in the VA scheduler rating. The mental health community says, hey, if you're going to develop a personality disorder, you're going to develop a personality disorder whether you went in the military or not. So they've always excluded military service as a cause or a trigger for a person to develop a personality disorder. So they will not establish service connection for people who have a diagnosis of personality disorder, and that therefore precludes them from receiving disability compensation. I applaud you, Mr. Hervey, for what you're doing. It's much needed. My concern and my concern is always this, our doctors. And making sure that these doctors do right by our veterans. That if they've had some kind of trauma, whether it's through military sexual trauma, whether it's through combat or some other kind of military trauma, because as you again said rightly, there's lots of ways in which we as service members experience trauma. And from that perspective, they should already be looking at an unspecified stressor or trauma-related disorder or post-traumatic stress disorder. They shouldn't even be looking at personality disorders. I mean, it's almost ridiculous. If a military service member has experienced trauma, then we should start in the DSM-5 with those types of mental health diagnoses that are related to trauma and stay far away from anything related to a personality disorder. Absolutely.
Exactly. And so that's the purpose of...
Thank you very much. This is Carol Ann Fossone. Thank you. I wish you the best of luck. But what Michael just said, that I think the education and the awareness has to be out there with defining this issue. And it's PTSD, and to go out and get the stressors. And that's why I would tell any of our veterans listening that have this so-called disability or this earmark, they've been earmarked, that they should go to somebody that knows how to turn that around, get back through the VA, as Michael said, with the exams. If you're being discharged administratively, the problem is, you're right, you're never going to get your benefits if this isn't changed and corrected. So God bless you. I wish you all the luck, and I'm so glad you made us aware of this.
You know, there's one other strategy that we use, and I know General Fasson and Jim also have used this strategy. The VA has a lot of presumptive service-connected conditions. And one of the presumptive periods is anything that a person is diagnosed with within 1 year of their release from active duty, the VA will presume is related to military service. We have had those veterans who were released from the military with a diagnosis of a personality disorder. We send them over to the VA and they get diagnosed at the PTSD clinic with PTSD. Then we file that claim and show that that is medical evidence to prove that the military misdiagnosed them.
But Michael, you just pointed out something that's so significant that we've talked about over and over. The 1 year mark, when you get a denial, you get discharged. I mean, people don't realize how significant that 1 year anniversary is. So you can't do something the 11th hour. You really need to start and making people aware of the conditions that, you know, they might be eligible for benefits.
Harris, I hope that we can spread the word for you and get this taken care of.
I greatly appreciate you having me on. I just want to say one quick thing, is that what I did is exactly what they just talked about at the VA. I was able to go and get a second opinion.
Awesome.
And I got medically cleared. They did it with testing, personality testing. And I was able to get my records cleaned up at the VA. So now I'm going to use that same methodology to get this affected. And we'll see what's going to happen here.
If you could get that information to Dale about your bill, I know our Michigan delegation to Congress are all staunch supporters of veterans. Senator Stabenow, Senator Peters here in Michigan, definitely Representative Debbie Dingell. I mean, she was married to the dean of the House of Representatives, who was a World War II veteran, John Dingell. Matter of fact, has a VA medical center named after him in Detroit. And then Tim Walberg, an amazing supporter of veterans and veterans-related issues. So I'd like to be able to maybe get that information in front of our Michigan delegation so they can support it in Congress.
Okay. I do this. I emailed it to Dale already, and it's going to be for the 38 CFR 4.125. I'm going to try to get that amended. I'm going to add something to it. And what I'm going to add to it is the general personality disorder criteria is that, this is what I have found, is that it's been overlooked. We all know that diagnosing is like troubleshooting. And when you troubleshoot, if you skip a step, you know, you're going to come out with the wrong type answer. And that right. That's what's going on here. They're skipping over the general personality disorder criteria, which is mandatory in the DSM-5. You don't have the option of skipping over it.
All right, Curtis, you've got my email address. If you could send me that information, I'll pass it along to Carol Ann and to Michael, and we'll get it out to our congressional representatives here in Michigan. And I know that Michael and Carol Ann have contacts outside the state. that they can also help out with that. Thank you very much for contacting us, and good luck.
Thank you so much. Thank you all. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.
Thank you for what you're doing.
And we're going to take another quick break here. And again, the number is 734-822-1600. Please give us a call if you have any questions. We're here to answer those questions for you. You are listening to Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Master Sergeant Gary Gordon requested permission 3 times to be inserted into a hot fire zone to protect downed helicopter crews before he got it. Details after this. Gordon, while serving as sniper team leader in Mogadishu, provided precision fire from the lead helicopter during an assault and at 2 helicopter crash sites. When Gordon learned that ground forces were not immediately available to secure the 2nd crash site, he and another sniper unhesitatingly volunteered to be inserted to protect the 4 critically wounded personnel. When debris and enemy ground fire at the site caused them to abort the first attempt, Gordon was inserted 100 meters south of the crash site. Gordon and his fellow sniper fought their way to reach the critically injured crew members. Gordon immediately pulled the pilot and the other crew members from the aircraft. Gordon used his long-range rifle and sidearm to kill an undetermined number of attackers until he ran out of ammunition. He then went back to the wreckage, recovering some of the crew's weapons and ammunition. Even though he was critically low on ammunition, he provided some of it to the dazed pilot and then radioed for help. After his team member was fatally wounded and his own rifle ammunition exhausted, he returned to the wreckage, recovering a rifle with the last 5 rounds of ammunition, and gave it to the pilot with the words, "Good luck." Then, armed only with his pistol, Gordon continued to fight until he was fatally wounded. His actions saved the pilot's life. He was posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor on May 23, 1994, by President Clinton.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Are you a veteran or a military spouse interested in starting or growing an existing business? Then you want to connect with VetBiz Central, Michigan's only veteran business resource center, providing free one-on-one business counseling services, including research plans and preparing veterans to be lender-ready. If you're in business, VetBiz Central offers comprehensive strategic marketing strategies to help you connect to corporations. They are one of 20 centers nationwide devoted to veteran business development through the U.S. Small Business Administration Office of Veteran Business Development. Vets helping vets. Visit their website at VetBizCentral.org or call 810-767-VETS.
We're back here on Veterans Radio and our benefits program for the month of February. Oh, another month is gone. Spring is right around the corner, finally. And so we're excited to have you on our program today. The number, if you still have a question, is 734-822-1600. A couple of things from the VA. And Michael, I know had an announcement or some news that he wanted to give out. So, Michael, it's up to you.
So, you know, I am subscribed to the VA's public affairs, and I get emails on a daily basis almost, it seems. And I thought something unique, it caught my eye, and they were celebrating a VA hospital in Florida that had administered their 10,000th dose of COVID-19 vaccine. So that prompted me to check with the public affairs folks at the VA Ann Arbor healthcare system. And it makes me wonder why they're not celebrating our facility.
Correct.
Who, as of February 24th, has administered 31,000 vaccines.
Wow. And
they're vaccinating over 1,000 veterans a day, either at the VA Ann Arbor healthcare system here in Ann Arbor, or at any one of their community-based outpatient clinics in Flint, Jackson, and Toledo. And they're not just sticking with the CDC guidelines right now, which is primarily reaching out. Most public health departments are reaching out to group 1A, which are those who are 65 and older and have all these other criteria. Well, the VA Ann Arbor is reaching out to VA veterans who are enrolled there that are 35. And older. They're also reaching out to VA patients determined by their caregiver to be at high risk for COVID, reaching out to VA patients who are frontline workers as determined by CDC guidelines, and they're also vaccinating designated caregivers enrolled in the VA's program for comprehensive assistance for family caregivers, meaning Dr. Kreisman said when she was on the show last month, it's not just veterans that she's administering these vaccines to, but if they are a family caregiver who's the primary caregiver for a veteran, they're also eligible to receive the vaccine. So I just thought that, as you mentioned on the onset of the show, how we do have here in Southeast Michigan one of the premier VA hospitals and facilities, I absolutely agree and applaud their efforts and the efforts of Dr. Kreisman and what they're doing over there. And I thought, well, how come the VA news is celebrating this hospital in Florida that's just done 10,000 and we just did 31,000? So hats off to Dr. Kreisman and her crew over there at the VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System.
Thank you.
Michael, that is awesome.
Isn't that awesome news?
I had talked to Brian earlier in the week, and he was so excited about their numbers. And when you just said that, 10,000, I was like, I was thinking that, holy moly, they've surpassed that like three times.
And, absolutely.
But that shows them. They're out there. They're getting the work done, and they're really not looking for the applause. So I'm glad you gave it to them. They are doing great work and trying to do the reach out there to our veterans.
Yes.
Caroline, I wanted to ask you this because it's something we had mentioned earlier on, that all of these vaccines that we're getting, which are amazing in their own right, they don't necessarily prevent us from getting COVID-19.
Well,
and
yes.
Could you explain what the benefits are of our getting vaccinated?
Well, I think it's important. It gives you some type of security that, we still have to do the precautions. You've got to wear the masks. I want to encourage you. Hand washing for me is very critical. The social distancing. Know your bubble. Don't go into a crowd. I mean, it's great that our restaurants are opened, but I have to be honest with you. I look at where my surroundings are, as I've always been taught in the military. This is not going to prevent me from ever getting coronavirus again, and all the new strains are out there. Hopefully, if I do pick something up, it's going to be to a lesser degree. I won't need hospitalization, being placed on a ventilator, et cetera. But I think it's really important that we literally follow the procedures and the guidelines. We're not out of the woods yet. It just kind of concerns me when people are not getting vaccinated. But I know it's a choice, and I do understand that. But I also have a choice then not to go into some proprietaries because people are running around with masks without masks on. And so I also have a choice. But I just think we need to still be vigilant to what we're doing.
Absolutely. And I, of course, we all encourage as many of you as you can, wherever you are across the country, is to contact your VA facility, wherever that might be, and see what their protocol and their scheduling is set up for. The supplies of the vaccine are hopefully going to be increasing, and that's going to allow more and more people to get vaccinated. And that's going to make everybody feel, I think, a little bit safer out there. I think that's something that's important.
Dale, if we have a minute, I would like to bring up something. And Michael, I don't know if you're seeing this, but when we have our veterans and they either have some type of status change, that could be a marital status change. It could be you've relocated someplace or you've changed your name. And you send in a letter to the VA to alert them. You think you're sending that in. And then we tend to follow up 30 days later, 60 days to make sure that it went through. Well, we just had a case recently where the veteran not only changed their location, so they moved from one state to another, but they also changed their name. And so we were following through with an appeal. And it's really hard when you get the info and you see the appeal is closed. And we were like, oh my God, how could this appeal be closed? We've been following this. We've been vigilant. We've addressed it. And it goes to find out that this change of name got changed in one of their systems, did not get changed in the other. So their old name, the appeal was still active and alive. In with their new name, they couldn't find the veteran anywhere. And so after a lot of discussion back and forth, proving to the VA the paperwork was all sent in, and I'm not talking just 30 days ago, I'm talking this, we sent that change in 2 years ago, and we've been tracking this, and then all of a sudden, they closed the veteran's appeal. Well, if we weren't staying on top of this, that could have been disastrous for this veteran. But, you know, it takes, once again, somebody, Michael, I would rest assured you would dog that until it got corrected. That's what you need to do. So please, veterans, be vigilant. If you're sending something in on your own, follow up with it. Make sure it's in the system.
And I can guarantee you, when it comes to an appeal, I know exactly what happened. They changed the veteran's name in the Veterans Benefits Management System, but they didn't change the veteran's name in VACLES.
Bingo.
VACLES is a separate software system that is used exclusively by the Board of Veteran Appeals, and yes, it is not tied to the Veterans Benefits Management System. So it's weird. It is just weird that the VA's computers don't talk to
us. Just a little. You nailed it. I didn't even talk to you about this, but just having a little knowledge, you know, in calling in and talking to the DRO, the decision review officer, or the coach, the appeals coach, I said, will you please check VACLES? Because I don't have access to VACLES. They called me back within an hour and said, oh my God.
That's where the problem.
You know, I said, I want a letter immediately. We called the veteran. Please get this changed. So, you know, after much follow-up, it did get corrected. But I'm telling you, you just have to stay on it.
Absolutely. I think that is so important when we keep harping on this, that you get a representative for yourself. You know, find an advocate who can, you know, maneuver through the system, because as individuals, there's no way that we can do it on our own. We'll just get frustrated. And, you know, there's many of us that are not computer literate, and we end up hitting send. And if we actually hit delete or whatever it might be, and the whole thing goes down the drain, and we can't afford that to happen. I did want to, two things I wanted to mention. I got an email today that said, and it said, don't post your vaccination card on social media, folks, because your information is on there. And people, you know, people are so excited, you know, oh, look, I got my second shot. Here it is. Here's my name. Oh, that's my social security number, address, and all that other stuff.
Number, all your personally identifiable information. Yeah.
Don't put that out there. You know, if you want to put a thumbs up, that's fine. But don't show your card to everybody. And the other thing is that this year we are celebrating the 75th anniversary of the VA. At the end of World War II. And I'm just going to read this one quick paragraph here. It says, just months after taking over administrator of the Veterans Administration, General Omar Bradley, we've all heard of them if we're history buffs, along with the VA's first medical director, General Paul Hawley, laid the groundwork for today's Veterans Health Administration by creating the Department of Medicine and Surgery. And they decided that they were going to put these medical centers near first-class universities with medical schools there. What a great concept. It certainly has worked for us here in the Ann Arbor area. And I know that it's working well at other parts of the country as well. So congratulations and happy anniversary to the VA. I'm sure that we will do a bigger program for them later on during the year.
That's affectionately referred to as Memo Number 2. That was the second memorandum that Omar Bradley sent out, giving the instructions about where they wanted to establish VA hospitals. And yes, that they would be co-located near good, well-established universities with hospitals and research.
Yeah, it says here, locating VA hospitals alongside major medical schools to promote research and innovation, responding both to the U.S. physician shortage and providing training for veterans pursuing medical education after the war. So there you go. So thanks a lot to the VA for that. Thanks a lot to both of you, Michael Smith, Carol Ann Falzone. We're going to be doing this again in March, on the 28th of March. And we want to make sure that if you have any questions, you can contact them. Michael, give out your phone number, Michael.
Washtenaw County Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm the director at 734-973-4540. Again, 734-973-4540.
And Carol Ann Falzone from Legal Help for Veterans.
Yes, 1-800-693-4800.
Thank you both very much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I learn so much every month. It's amazing. Thanks, guys, very much.
Awesome to be with you, Dale. You too, General Falzone.
Thanks, Derek.
Thanks, Derek.
Okay, that's another Veterans Radio program, or they say that's a wrap. We want to thank our sponsors. That is Legal Help for Veterans, as I mentioned, the National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, the Eisenhower Center, VetBiz Central, the Charles S. Kettle VA Medical Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I'd be very remiss if I didn't thank VVA Post 310, VFW Post 423, and American Legion Post 46 here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, for all their generous support. If you would like to support Veterans Radio, go to veteransradio.net. Until next week, you are dismissed.